Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Super Dan Anderson, and you are listening to the AMAA Legends and Pioneer Radio Blog Show with Professor Gary Lee and the Sport Karate Museum Archives, protecting the history, one warrior at a time. Tell them Super Dan sent you.
Aloha, everyone. This is Professor Gary Lee from the Sport Karate Museum Archives, and welcome to the AMAA Pioneers and Legends Archives Radio Show, Parts Unknown, where we feature the personal up-to-date interviews with the pioneers and legends of sport karate and the American martial arts icons. You know, when you do a show like this, you always wish that you can find someone that has not only as much history in your mind as I've accumulated in the few years I've been here on the mainland from Hawaii, but you come across people like the interview with Dan Anderson and Mr. Kirvin, of course, the great Jeff Smith. But our tonight's guest is someone is that same caliber. He might even be the leader of the pack. In fact, he is president of an association, which we'll talk about a little bit later. But he is one of these guys that knows everything and remembers everything about the sport karate heyday. And that is Mr. Mike Genova. And we're going to be talking to him real soon here in just a few minutes. But again, thank you for letting us come into your home tonight or your computer or your phone, wherever you're at, and let us talk about sport karate and what it did for America. Always remember that we're all Asian influence in our karate and what we do and everything we teach as far as martial arts goes. But sport karate, it was born in America, and that's what the Sport Karate Museum Archives concentrates on, to honor the pioneers and legends that helped create that in America. So every show, we have a special interview with someone that actually lived that life between the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, the 90s. And we share their stories with you, the listener. We'd like to say thank you tonight to some people that are part of our show. Mr. Dr. Nick Chamberlain, who's doing the Gathering of Eagles, and the International Black Belt Kempo Hall of Fame. I promised this to Mr. Burke many, many years ago at the Super Show that I'd always mention Mr. Floyd Burke and Mr. Robert Young from Black Belt Magazine, what they've done for the museum for the past 20 years. We appreciate that so much. And we also want to thank the people at Juventix who does the registrations today in tournaments, doing an incredible job and taking the next level of tournament registration. But, you know, talking again about our guests, to set it up, you know, back in the 70s, America was broken up into various parts of the country when it came to sport karate. And a lot of it was helped because of a magazine called Karate Illustrated Magazine and some visionary people like Renardo Bardin, Kurt Seaman, some other people that saw that given regions to different parts of the country would help build the sport. And so that's what they did. And the best of my ability, and Mike will help me later, New York was in their own world. Then you had the East Coast and Virginia and North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia, and then it kind of stopped there because Florida, as we'll talk about, they were in their own world. And then you shot across, you had the southern states and Texas. We kind of much were in our own world too. The Midwest, upper Chicago area, up in north area, and then going across the Northwest. And then, of course, California was like Florida and Texas. They kind of did things their own way. And the regions were broken up, but there was a group of guys that, a handful, back then we knew who the number one fighter was, no doubt. With all the divisions there are today, we just don't know, but we'll talk about that too. But let's go back to Southern martial arts. Pioneer people like Sam Chapman, Joe Corley, Jeff Smith, John Chung, Larry Bullard. I bet you haven't heard that name in a long time. A lot of people who put on tournaments, Jerry Pittenden, Bill McDonald, who did the tournament circus back then, they created a group called Sika. And Southern Karate became very strong, and there were stars born from very scratch beginnings to create Southern Sport Karate. And Mr. Genova is one of those people. You know, middleweight national champion and fellow Sport Karate Archives historian Mike Genova is old school. You know, old school ways and personal influences made Mike Genova a mainstay in the Sport Karate memories. He was a top 10 national rated fighter. Some say one of the best defensive fighters in the books. He had an unnerving sidekick, defensive and offensive, and a blistering back fist that'd be in your face. His timing was on spot. However, what made him stand out, he was very, very, very smart and cagey. Always thinking, always progressing in his approach to tournament fighting. He fought everywhere, and normally it was with his best buddies, who happened to be the stars themselves. Mr. Bruce Bucci, a heavyweight national champion, who's his instructor, by the way, and his best friend, Mr. Keith Vitale, who became a three-time national karate champion, were his traveling sidekicks. And they traveled everywhere. They were pretty much known as the Three Musketeers of Southern Sport Karate. They were known as, and they would produce teaching talents, incredible students like John Ork, Joey Shiflett, Michael Goldman, Stacy Duke, Marty Knight, Jerry Prince, and so many others. You know, Mike is a kids advocate too, a big kids advocate. He's worked with Chuck Norris, he's worked with the community, and his responsibilities in mind, always caring, always looking for that one special student, will excel. And talking with him over the years, I know he cares and loves the work he does in the kids sector. He has been inspired by men like Bill Wallace, Joe Corley, and many others, as you'll hear in the Legends Name Game. And remember, he has fought and beat some of the biggest sport karate stars, as we'll talk about too. We will also talk about his duty as president of the South Carolina Black Belt Hall of Fame and the high standards to be nominated and inducted. You know, what I find is so amazing is the memory of all his fights. He can quote where, when, what time, if he lost or won, and by what margin of points, where he got hit, where he hit his opponent, and with what kick or punch. You'll see. I promise. We will also talk about who are his favorite fighters and heroes, advertise, and how they helped change things around the country of the early sport karate in America. You know, men like Roy D. Kirby, Judge Roy Kirby, Larry Kelly, rest in peace, Larry, Ray McCallum, The Animal, The Kid, Steve Fisher, wow, Dan Anderson, Toki Hill, Sam Chapman, Marty Knight. We'll talk about the NKC Karate Circuit, the Mid-American Diamond Nationals, the Fort Worth Pro-Am, the Karate Illustrated Magazine years, and the rise and fall of Black Belt Point Karate and his vision, and knowing the story and the ratings in America, and who killed it, the event, the promoter, and the timing of his historic time in the American Sport Karate icons. The Black Belt Point Fighters Union that almost started, and what is it like to be chosen as one of the original history generals of the Sport Karate Museum and Archives. Yes, we will talk about it all with this fascinating in-depth parts unknown interview with Poodle, as we called him back in the day. Please welcome Mr. Mike Genova, my special guest tonight, a living history book of Sport Karate to parts unknown. Hey, Mike, are you there, buddy?
I am. Aloha, Gary.
Aloha. Aloha.
I know you didn't expect that.
You didn't expect that? Well, you know, I've gotten a little bit better in my writing, and I got to thank Mr. Bowen for that because he's allowed me to kind of express my feelings in words and voice. So welcome
Absolutely.
To the show, Mike. I'm so glad to have you.
Well, thank you for having me, Gary, and it's such a privilege for you to have me record this so everyone will know for years to come, you know, all the important things about sport karate and during what I call the golden era of sport karate.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And you know, well, as I said in the introduction, you know, this is a two-part type interview. So the first part, I'd like my listeners to know who is Mike Genova. That's how we all kind of started out and how you got started. And we'll lead into what you're doing now, of course. And, of course, we'll talk about the tournament stuff. But talk about the beginning years. How did you get started? How old were you? Who influenced
you
first? I'll
tell the story how it started.
How did you get started back in your days? Yes, sir.
This is the story. I grew up in a large Italian-Lebanese family, seven children, and we were wrestling and fighting and playing a sport all the time. Went to high school. I played soccer and basketball in high school. Graduated 18 years old and wanted to do some sports, and there was nothing for me to do that was, you know, organized. I was looking, and my best friend at the time was Bruce Brucci, and Bruce was in karate, and he was fighting all the time and doing tournaments, and he had been in since he was 16, and I wasn't really interested in it, but I was reading the magazines whenever I'd go over to his house. So I knew who, you know, Joe Louis was, and I even knew who Dan Anderson was. I mean, his pictures were in the magazines, and Steve Fisher,
right,
and Wallace. I knew all those names, but I was still not doing it. I was actually racing bicycles, and I'll never forget, it was on a Saturday, and it was about a 60-mile race, and there were hundreds of bikers, and I finished third, and I got a trophy that's about 4 inches tall, which I still have to this day, and I got in my car, and I drove over to Bruce Brucci's house to show him my beautiful 4-inch tall trophy, and I walked in, and there were like 30 people standing in Bruce's house, and they were all drinking beer, and Bruce was standing there in his gi, and he was all sweaty, and he had a 4-foot tall trophy, and he had gotten third place as well, and I took my little trophy, and I sat it on the mantle, and I went over and said, "Bruce, I'm ready to do karate." So I'm assuming it was the size of the trophies that lured me into karate. So when I told Bruce, I was 18. I just graduated from high school, and it was in late spring, early, you know, like around April or May. And Bruce said, "Well, Mike, I'm leaving in 2 weeks to fight in the internationals in Long Beach, California, at Ed Parker's tournament." I said, "Bruce, I'm going with you." So he started training me. He started showing me a back fist and a grab and a chop to the back of the neck and, you know, some of that kind of stuff we did back then, and
I was
so excited.
What year was that? I'm just curious. What year was that, buddy?
1972.
Okay.
And we got on the airplane, and, you know, back then you could do stuff on the airplane. We were standing in the aisle of the airplane, and Bruce is, you know, showing me a grab and some stuff like that. And
cool.
We got off the plane and went to the Long Beach Arena. And Queen Mary was in the harbor in Long Beach. I'd never seen anything like that before. And we went in, and it was a 3-day tournament. It was a Friday, Saturday, Sunday tournament. And it was just overwhelming, overwhelming. There were karate people everywhere. You know, I've heard stories of more than 2,000 competitors. I don't know. You could probably look it up. But we met Red Kelly, and Ed Parker was there, and I saw Joe Louis, and Darnell Garcia and John Natividad and Bill, you know, all these incredible fighters that I'd been reading about. So I was like, you know, a kid in a candy store, man. So I remember being down on the floor, 1972. So I remember being down on the floor and watching Dan Anderson fight Byung Yu, and just couldn't believe it. Byung Yu was jumping and spinning, and Dan was doing all kinds of stuff, and Byung Yu ended up winning the fight. I remember Dan had his long blonde hair, kind of curly, and he was just unbelievable. And Byung Yu ended up fighting, and it was Joe Louis in the finals against Darnell Garcia, and Darnell Garcia won for grand champion. And I couldn't wait till Bruce taught me more karate. And we hitchhiked back from California. We didn't have money to fly. And as soon as we got back, we went to Chuck Matthews' tournament in Belmont, North Carolina, or Asheville, one of those small places up there. And that's when I saw Bill Wallace fight Glenn Kinney for grand champion just 2 weeks later. And it was a smaller tournament. That's when we met Joe Corley. Of course, I was a white belt. Bruce was a black belt. So, you know, Bruce could talk to him. I couldn't talk to him at the time. But I saw all these Darryl Wilson. I know you remember him. What a great, you know, kicker
yes.
he was. And I'm just running around
Shinkai,
going crazy.
Absolutely,
Gary. Running around
well,
watching
you know,
these guys.
Well, you know, Mr. Chairman, Mikey, the Internationals
sure.
was my first adventure into sport karate, too. I got there in 1970. I was at the very first one. And I
wow.
had the pleasure of this with a couple of years back with Mr. Stone and Benny Yakitas. We had our booths together at the 50th Internationals at the 50th anniversary. And it was a really deep memory. I knew exactly what you said. And that being your first one, that's so cool that that karma, that was your first tournament, too. Now,
absolutely,
Bruce,
and I
Bruce.
Believe that is karma. That is definitely karma there because, you know, had I gone and it not been a great experience, I may not have, you know, pursued it a bit. but it was just
incredible.
Yeah, you'd
be another sport legend in another sport.
Yeah, absolutely. And I missed my division. Well, Gary, I missed my division because I couldn't find white belt lightweight. By the time I got there, they told me I missed it, so they sent me to the blue belt heavyweight, and I weighed 150-something pounds. And I remember being up 2-0. It was the only two moves I knew was that grab and then that sweep with the front leg and then the chop to the back of the neck. Bruce had taught it to me. I did it twice, and I scored 2 points, and after that, that's all I had. So the other guy just went ahead and beat me after that because I didn't know anymore. So I told Bruce, I said, you got to show me some more stuff. So Bruce Brucci literally taught me, you know, move, hands up, fight, kick, punch, you know, get hit, come back. I mean, you know, it was old school, no pads, and that's where I learned. I learned from, you know, from Bruce Brucci, and people always go, well, who's your instructor? And I said, Bruce. He goes, well, he's the same age. And, you know, and I said, Bruce Brucci taught me, and, he, you know, if it hadn't been for Bruce, I'm telling you, tens of thousands of children in Columbia, South Carolina would have never had what we have here. And this, the hundreds and hundreds of black belts and all the success stories had Bruce Brucci not got me started and taught me karate. So I don't have a lot
of
people.
Well, he's a great guy. He was a great fighter.
Yeah.
And you know, like I said, he was one of the great heavyweights without a doubt. Now, when you became black belt, how long did it take you to become black belt?
It took me 3 years to get my black belt, and I got my black belt from one of the other sparring partners, Pete Manchi and Bruce Brucci.
So did you start fighting points as an early belt, or did you just start fighting points as a black belt?
Oh, no. I fought. I have a bunch of trophies as an under belt, and,
okay,
yeah,
cool.
I fought all the way through the belts and won, you know, I didn't start winning a lot until the brown belt, but I want to, you know, I placed a lot in the underbelts, but at brown belt, I really started to excel.
Cool. Now I've got a parts unknown question for you, because I truly love both you guys with all my heart. Now you had a really competitive, a friendship with Sam Chapman, and you guys were middleweights. You guys were tough guys, and you had the first full contact fight. Tell me a little bit about that, how that got started, and how you guys went from
exactly
points
how I
to
got
full
started.
Contact.
Okay. What happened was right after Joe Louis and Howard Jackson and Bill Wallace and Jeff Smith and those guys, you know, all fought in California, and it was on national TV. Right after that, Joe Corley wanted to promote a full contact fight. So instead of doing it in Atlanta, he did a test run here in Columbia, South Carolina at the Township Auditorium. And I'm going to send you the poster, the original poster. I have it framed, and I'm going to send it to you, Gary, for your museum. But
wow.
He had asked for Bruce Brucci to fight Keith Hayflick, and Jerry Rome fought Frank Wood. Keith Vitale fought Bobby Tucker, and I was supposed to fight a fighter named Barney Tucker. I was a brown belt. It was in November of 1974. I had not received my black belt yet. And I had seen this Barney Tucker guy fight before, didn't think he was much, so I said, okay, I'll fight. Well, right about a month or so before the fight, they said, well, we're switching it to Sam Chapman. Well, I'd seen Sam fight, and, you know, Sam being a former Marine and also a former bodybuilder, and I don't know if we can curse on your radio, but he's just a bad ass. I mean, Sam Chapman is,
yes,
I mean, if he didn't outpoint you, he definitely hurt you. And I was like, okay. You know, just I was, you know, still young and stupid, didn't think it clearly, and we didn't know how to train for anything like that. So we just got in the best shape we could, and we fought, and it was incredible. It was incredible. The crowd, we had 2,700 people in the arena, and that's the max. It was packed. It was loud. It was crazy. And Jerry Rome and Frank Wood fought, and just, you know, both of them were just exhausted. And Bruce lost a match to Keith Hayflick, but Keith Hayflick was a former boxer, and it was a little bit unfair in the sense that, you know, in the early days, if you had boxing skills, you pretty much had an edge.
You had an advantage, yeah.
And before
well,
we talk about my
Jerry
fight,
Rome went on to be a world champion for my listeners
world
to
champion,
know.
World champion,
yeah. Yeah, absolutely, trained by Asia Gordon and Mr. Corley and stuff. And then,
and
of course,
Sam
I want
to
ask you – and
sure.
Mr. Chapman, of course, because he started with Sam. But I want to
ask
you,
minute, Gary,
when's your relationship? Okay.
Let me, before you do that, let me just tell you. that fight with Keith Vitale and Bobby Tucker. It is on Super 8 film. You can talk to Keith Vitale. I think he has a way to get a copy.
I've seen it.
These two guys went toe-to-toe and did not stop kicking and punching for three rounds. There was never a break.
It looked like two Troy Dorsey's fighting each other.
It was exactly true. Now, my fight with Sam was much more methodical, and I used my sidekick kick to keep Sam away as much as I could. I didn't want those big giant arms knocking me out anytime early. And Sam, he did really. I won the first round slightly. Sam dominated me in the second round. I just didn't have an answer for him. And then the third round, I was lucky enough to get a sidekick in on Sam and ended the fight. But just feel very blessed that Sam didn't connect with one of those incredibly hard ridge hands, because had he done that, I'm not quite sure I would have pursued martial arts much more after that, after being knocked out or getting beat in front of that many local people. So there was a definite bit of martial arts karma there as well. But Sam and I have been friends for 40 years, and even though we were in the same division and we've traveled together and eaten many meals together and promoted people together, and I have learned a lot of my later martial arts philosophies and skills from Sam Chapman. So I consider Sam also as an instructor.
Yes, he's an incredible person and a mentor.
Yes, he is.
Father figure. I got to ask you, you had an incredible relationship, and you still do to this very moment, with an amazing guy, three-time national champion, movie star, author, motivational speaker, great, super martial artist, Keith Vitale. How'd that start out?
Keith was in Columbia, South Carolina when Bruce and I were coming up, and he was at the University of South Carolina with an instructor named John Roper, and they were teaching Taekwondo. And Bruce actually had more of an introduction with Keith, and, you know, they were going back and forth, and Keith would spar a little bit. And, you know, Keith being a lot lighter, Bruce weighed 240 back then, and we kept encouraging Keith to come to the open tournaments because, you know, he had become a friend of ours, not necessarily the closest that we have now. He's just one of the guys at the time, but we liked him. I mean, Keith was so likable, and we all got along. We didn't have a rivalry where we were, you know, competing against each other. And this is a very now this goes down in your archives as one of the greatest stories, Gary. We take him
yes,
to
sir.
The Battle of Atlanta, and Keith is fighting in his first fight. And this is back in the year that Joe Corley invented multiple points for multiple techniques. Keith is losing 4-0 in his very first fight. There's only seconds left. Keith does a jump in the air, back spinning, whatever kind of kick, wheel kick, heel kick, spin kick, kicks the guy in the head, scores 4 points. That's a 4-point kick back in the day for Joe Corley. Then he scores a back fist before regulation time, and Keith wins 5-4. Now, my thought on that is, and Keith and I have talked about this many times, when we got Keith to come out of that Taekwondo closed tournament circuit, had Keith lost that fight 4-0, I don't know if Keith would have pursued the open tournaments anymore. Now, Keith's next fight, Ken Dallas, top 10 in his region, beat him.
Yes,
Mike Coles, top 10 in his region, Keith beat him. Next fight, Larry Carnahan, Keith beat him. Keith beat the next three fighters, were all top 10 in their regions, beat them all. Keith won several, I think Keith won six fights total before he fought Bobby Tucker. And Bobby Tucker did not have to fight until the final fight. I remember Bobby Tucker sitting in a gray uniform with a Tasmanian devil patch on his leg, watching Keith fight every fight. Bobby sat in a chair. Keith at least had five, maybe six fights, and then had to fight Bobby Tucker before he lost.
Well, let me tell people what the Tasmanian devil patch was. That was a creation that Sam created. And what he did was, anybody that fought tournaments and they took third place or higher, I think it was three times or whatever amount he won, then you got your patch. And Bobby was the first
one. An earned patch.
You earned it. You had to earn it. And
those are the best.
Underneath it had little brother, it had FLH on the bottom of it, and that meant fight like hell.
We know what that is.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, that was Keith Vitale's first open tournament. And I think it just made Keith that much more hungry. And then the next story that I will tell you is that in 1973, we were at the Battle of Atlanta, and this was the Tournament of Champions, which I have on film, by the way. I have the Tournament of Champions on film. I got it for my 40th anniversary at my karate school. Pete Manchi gave me the Super 8 films, and I had them converted. And it's got Bill Wallace, Everett Eddy, Jeff Smith, Howard Jackson, Fred
wow.
Wren. It's got all of these guys lined up fighting. And I've got the fights. Chuck Norris is a referee. Mike Stone's a referee. Mike Foster from Florida. All these guys
wow.
are the referees.
Yeah.
Howard
yeah.
Jackson, John Natividad, Darnell Garcia. These are the fighters. Glenn Kinney. And we were there. We watched that live. And I now have that on film.
Wow, that's incredible.
And Gary, I can give you that for your museum as well.
Oh, you're going to make me cry, Mikey. I mean, that's incredible. You know, that falls in the same category as a 16-millimeter film that Jim Harrison gave me of his famous fight that he set up in that little television station where, you know, Mr.
Right.
Lewis won a dollar. So I'll put it next to that and we'll play him. I mean, that's incredible, Mikey. Okay, now I want to ask you, now you got Keith and you got Bruce and you got you. And you,
right.
you're building your reputation, traveling around the country, and all of a sudden the ratings come out, which is I talked a little bit about, which is the Karate Illustrated magazine ratings and the people that was behind that. And all of a sudden now we have motivation to go to tournaments other than just go and winning a trophy. And you guys
Well, this
were...
is the story about that. This is the story.
Okay.
They did an alphabetical rankings when Jeff Smith and Joe Lewis and Bill Wallace and all those guys moved to full contact. And Keith and I, we were talking because we had a vision. And Keith said, Mike, let's let these guys do the full contact. Keith beat Paul Anselmo, and he beat Bobby Tucker, and he, you know, won like three or four full contact fights. But we didn't want to do that. We liked point. And he said, let's quit doing this point karate. Let's quit doing full contact. Let's do point. And basically fill the gap. So I said, let's do it, Keith. Let's just do it. And I was a middleweight, and he was a lightweight. And he said, how are we going to do it? And I said, well, with, you know, the rankings. So I kept the records for every single tournament. We went everywhere for 1 year. It was 1977. And I, at 76 and 77, it overlapped on who beat who won what tournament. And we were at a tournament every weekend. Well, I sent him in to Renardo Barden, Karate Illustrated, never met him before. And he actually wrote in the editorial that I did this. And he said,
wow.
Because the year before they did alphabetical. And we don't know who was number one. McCallum was in there, Dan Anderson, Steve Fisher, Ray
right.
Sua, Tony Palomar. I still have that magazine, by the way, Bobby Tucker. And then we said, listen, don't do this alphabetical. You know, let us know. Hear the ranking. Hear the people. And then that's the very next year, he actually rated 12, and he called it the top dozen fighters in the country. And then that's when Larry Kelly and John Longstreet and all these guys, Jimmy Tabaris, Al Francis, started going into the rankings. And now we're looking at the rankings, and it's like, you mean if I beat this guy, I can move up? If I go to that tournament, we can move up? And it gave us something to strive for. So Renardo Barden pursuing that in the magazine and then getting the directors like Sam Chapman and Joe Corley and Jerry Pennington and all these guys to send in their rankings, then the regional
right.
ranking. We were Region 8. And we wanted to be in the tops in Region 8. I have in my school, Gary, a magazine thing with 7 of the top 10 from Region 8 are from my school. 7 of the top 10 are from my school. And that would be Goldman and me and Bruce Brucci and Keith Vitale and Joey Shiflett. These guys, 7 out of 10 from our entire region are from one school. And that is phenomenal.
That is. That's,
I mean,
that's
to me, that's even better
you know,
than winning
a
tournament.
You mentioned Goldman, Michael Goldman, just a plug for
yeah.
Michael. You know, Michael was an incredible fighter. He also was a NASCA world champion, correct?
Yeah, I didn't keep up with all the stuff afterwards, but yes, he is. And Michael Goldman, you know, you gotta know, this is the deal, Gary, and this sounds, you know, so like I'm trying to be humble, and I'm not. I'm just telling you, being accurate. We would have
sure.
40, 50 black belts in my Rosewood school, and we'd be fighting. And I could fight 15, 20 rounds and maybe win half of them. That's how many good fighters we had. I remember in 1978, Keith Vitale and Bobby Tucker and Richard Jackson, the four of us, flew out to Minneapolis and fought in the Mid-American Nationals. Keith beat John Longstreet. I beat Terry Norblum. Keith wins grand champion, and he won the diamond ring. We come back to my school for the Sunday workout. The first three fighters I get in the ring with, my brother Tommy, Steve Evans, and David Estefano, all beat me to 3. All 3 beat me to 3. and I just won the Mid-America Nationals the weekend before. And it's okay, because this was our training. This is how we got better. I mean, and Michael Goldman would be right in the middle of that.
Your brother, Tommy, was a great fighter. I remember watching Tommy fight.
I never beat him, Gary. I never beat my own brother, and he should have. You know, when I say he should have, I really wanted Tommy to travel more. He won the battle in 1976, and won 12 grand championships in a row. And Keith and I talk about it all the time. We've never done that. And one time in North Carolina, and Jesse Bowen, you may have been there, but Tommy beat Jay Bell, Robert Harris, and James White back to back to back. And me and Vitaly were standing on the sidelines going, we've never done that. I mean, that's three of the best fighters ever out of the whole region. And Tommy beat him back to back to back.
Another brother, you mentioned Keith again, his brother Steve Vitaly. I remember he was a good fighter too. He was a great fighter too.
He won the Battle of Atlanta as well.
He ran in the family.
He won the Battle of Atlanta as well. And I remember one year in the Tournament of Champions, you know, we were all there. Me, Keith, and Goldman, and my brother Tommy, all were seated into the Tournament of Champions at the Battle of Atlanta.
Well, I got one more question to ask you before we go into our break.
Sure.
And I want you to combine the NKC Karate Circuit, the Mid-American Diamond Nationals, and the Fort Worth Pro-Am. Basically, what was the difference in the three circuits? And I know you fought in all three. I mean, give me your opinion of the three, which was the best you felt, and how it affected you.
Well, as far as hospitality, there's nothing better than the Mid-American Nationals. You know, with Larry Carnahan and the Worleys, I mean, it's so organized, and it's incredible. And the fighters were all what I would consider very good fighters, but very clean fighters. You know, you would never expect to get hurt in those types of tournaments. Everybody had great technique. Was anybody overly incredible fighter? I don't think so. Oklahoma City, basically the same. But in Texas, technique not as good, but you're going to get your butt kicked. You may win a fight. I remember fighting Rudy Smedley down there, and I couldn't – you know, I'm just telling you what, I was very lucky to get out of the ring. I mean, I beat Adams Robinson and Rudy Smedley and D.P. Hill and all these, you know, incredible Texas fighters. But down there, the technique didn't matter nearly as much as fighting hard and aggressive. But, you know, Keith and I did very well in Texas and very well in Oklahoma City and Mid-Americas because I think our key was we adjusted from region to region to region. We saw fighters who were very good in their region but couldn't fight well other places, and that's one of the things that Keith and I really tried to do was adjust from region to region, and we did.
Well, I know that talking to Mr. Kerb in our close interview, he said that he copycatted the Diamond Nationals for the Fort Worth Pro-Am, so a lot of his elegance got from them. What made the NKC?
I want to say this before you take your break, Gary. Gary, you got to give me 10 seconds to tell you about Ray McCallum. Ray McCallum has done as much for sport karate as anybody since Bill Wallace and Keith Vitaly. And I think that Dan Anderson and John Longstreet and Robert Harris and Bobby Tucker would all agree with me. He was a personality head and shoulders above the whole crew of us. And I can't say enough about him. I mean, he was a star among stars.
Well, save a little bit because we're going to talk about him in the Legends Name Game. McCallum is on that list. I'll be right back in just a minute. Stay with me. I'll be right back with Mr. Mike Genova. And God bless you all. Mike, I'll be right back, buddy. Okay?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, what a great interview we're having tonight. But I've got to mention a couple things that's coming up. In July the 6th to the 8th in Las Vegas, Nevada, the MGM Grand, there's going to be the Super Show, which is put on each year by Century Fitness and their organization, Maya. There will be a booth this year. We'll have a booth for the Sport Karate Museum Archives. And special guests are Jim Buten. That's right. Blood and Guts, Jim Buten, from Oklahoma City. He'll be there signing his book and autographs. We have the one and only, talking about earlier tonight, Mr. Jimmy Gotso de Barres, the first 1980 World Point Karate Champion by Karate Illustrated Magazine. And the one and only, that's right, Hanchi Jesse Bowen will be there with the radio show. And we're doing live interviews. And we'll have the book there, Who's Who in Martial Arts, Memoirs of American Samurai. And my book will be there. And also representing the Sport Karate Museum Archives will be Mr. Jim Butcher. That'll be July 6th through the 8th at the MGM Grand in Las Vegas at the Super Show. Then also coming up in August 4th and 5th in Washington, D.C., there's going to be a gathering of incredible, incredible pioneers and legends. They'll be honoring Mr. June Rhee. And special guest speakers will be Hansi Bowen, Jeff Smith, Mr. Joe Corley, Mr. Bill Clark. And also there'll be the Legends Banquet, and honoring the people of the book for 2017. And this will be Mr. Dennis Brown's NASCA event, the U.S. Capitol Classics. So if you're in Washington, D.C. area, if you'd like to fly, just call Mr. Brown. He'll give you all the information. August the 11th and 12th and 13th, Dallas, Texas, Dr. Nick Chamberlain, Kempo advocate and master, will be putting on the Gathering of Eagles. Years ago, Al Tracy started this in California, bounced around to Las Vegas, but now it's in Texas, and it's going to put together all the Kempo styles: American Kempo, Kaji Kempo, Kushiru Kempo, Lua Lua, all the Hawaiian Kempo styles, American Kempo, which is the lineage of Mr. Parker. There'll be quite a few people here, dozens of seminars, ending with an incredible time at the International Kempo Black Belt Hall of Fame and Inductions. They'll be hosted by Dr. Nick Chamberlain and his lovely wife, Kimberly Jones. I'm sorry. So, by the way, next week will be Dr. Nick Chamberlain. So he'll have all the information on the event, on the Hall of Fame. So stay tuned next week for our show with Dr. Nick Chamberlain. We're going to end the month, which has been five shows this year, with Mr. Bob Liker at the last show. And then I got Mr. Jim Buten from Oklahoma, the 1st of June. And I'm working on some really special guests in June that's going to hopefully knock your socks off, knock your black belt around. Well, anyway, I'm here, of course, with the one and only Mike Genova. And we're going to come back here and play the game that we created with this show. It's kind of like a fight with words. Not really a fight, but two-minute person that I put up in front of you. And, you know, either praise him or decide not to say something about him that you really, you know, opinionated. That's fine. This is what we call it, parts unknown. Mike, are you there, buddy?
I am.
Okay,
yes,
let's
sir.
Start with the religious name game. And then I've got my magic question I've been waiting all night to ask you. So let's do the
okay.
Legend name game, then I'm going to ask that magic question. The first person, Mr. Roy D. Kerbin.
Roy Kerbin, when Keith and I went down to, also with my brother Tommy, we flew down to Fort Worth, Dallas to fight. Roy met us and got us in there and told us, you know, he knew we were coming, and he set us up and told us what the rules were and the changes in the rules, and, you know, and just was very, very kind and hospitable for us. And but I'll never forget, it was in July, and it was a cement floor, and there were no water bottles, there was no water, and we were dying, but it was one of the most incredible events that we had been in, and Roy treated us like the Worleys, and like John and Pat did up there in Carnahan up in Mid-Americas, just treated us like superstars when we came in. But I'll never forget this thing. I got in my ring. I was a middleweight at the time, and it doubled around the ring, Gary. It doubled around the ring. And I looked up, and I saw my brother Tommy, and he was like 30, 40 feet from me. And I screamed to him. I said, "Tommy, get over here. We're lined up." He goes, "You're in the wrong ring. I'm in the middleweight ring." And so Roy was standing there. I said, "Roy," he goes, "they're both middleweight rings. We take the top two from
right.
this one and match them with the top two from that one." That's how
there
many,
so many
fighters
people.
There were
right.
in Texas.
Yeah.
Well, anyway,
yeah.
we both won our divisions, and then I lost in the quarterfinals, and Tommy lost to Ray McCallum in the finals that night. And just one of the greatest experiences, one of the five greatest tournament experiences I've had in karate is at Roy Kerbin's Dallas-Fort Worth Nationals.
You know, my 25th anniversary is this year, and he's my special guest speaker for the roast Saturday night. And it's
well, please ask him about that. He'll
McCallum.
Tell you.
Well, I will. You know, I call him, you know, like at least four times a month. He's really a mentor to me. We lost this guy a couple of months ago, and he was a Kempo brother, Mr. Larry Kelly. Tell me a little bit about Larry.
Well, you know, I was winning everything in the light heavyweight division. I moved up to light heavyweight to make room for my brother Tommy as a middleweight, and I just stormed through the division, and I was beating everybody in the division. And went to Mid-Americas to fight my second time there, and I'd already won the year before. And everyone said, well, you know, this guy's winning everything too. And, you know, I said, well, let's see what's going on. So I got I'd just gotten back from Steve Fisher's tournament in California, and I'd broken my thumb, and I had a half of a cast on. So I got, speaking of June Rhee, I got these big, giant gloves that June Rhee had come out with. It was extra large. They were between a boxing glove and a sport karate glove. So I wore it, and I didn't want anybody to know I was injured. And the only people that knew was Keith, and Keith, you know, Vitale went up there with me. So I went up, and I'm wearing these gloves, and I won four or five fights. So I made it to the finals against Larry. Well, Larry knew my thumb was broken. He must have talked to Fisher or somebody. And we had the longest recorded fight in sport karate history. And I have the magazine article, and Glenn Keeney is the head referee. And it went 27 and a half minutes into overtime before Larry scored on me.
Wow.
And everybody was saying it was because Mike was so good and Larry was so good, and that's not the truth. The truth was I was very limited with that hand. I had no back fist, no ridge hand, and I had to block all of his kicks with my backhand. So I was fighting the best defensive fight I could possibly fight, and Larry did not go full speed. We've talked about it several times over the years before his death, and he did tell me that he did not go full speed.
That was before the two-point kick, right? That was everything was still 1 point?
Right.
Or was that
right.
two-point
This
kick?
Was in 79 in Minneapolis.
Yeah.
And I have my second-place trophy. I have, you know, hundreds and hundreds of black belt trophies, and I can see them on my shelf at the karate school, and I know which one's which. And Larry Kelly beat me 1-0 in 27 and a half minutes overtime. And you know what? I never like to lose. I never enjoy losing. But I didn't mind losing to Larry Kelly because what a wonderful, wonderful person he was for sport karate.
Yes, he was. Rest in peace, Larry. We miss you, buddy. Now, this next person, before you tell me about him, because we suck out time a little bit, I got to tell you a real fast story myself. I got to roast Mr. McCallum here a few years back. And you know, it was an incredible event, but the best story I've got is that it thunderstormed so bad the day of the roast. It was terrible. And Mr. Corley and Mr. Smith were flying in from Atlanta, and they got caught in that huge storm. Of course, they had the option of just turning around and going back, you know, and not, you know, waiting the storm out, which, you know, in Texas, the storms were terrible. And they ended up waiting for hours, and they came. That's how much they loved Raymond. And they came and they roasted him, and, you know, tell me, I mean, Mr. McCallum is amazing, as you said. He's pound for pound, critics, movie people, editors, black belts, promoters have all said probably one of the best competitors, not one of the best, but probably the best competitor, point cry there was, along with Mr. Linda Dinley.
Well, this may take an extra minute, but let me tell you the story about Ray McCallum. Tournament
tell
of Champions,
me, tell
of Atlanta. Joe Corley is supposed to match me up with Herb Johnson. Again, I'm winning everything in the light heavyweight division, and I told Joe that I'd wanted to fight Herb Johnson from Indianapolis because I'd never fought him, and he was winning everything in the Midwest. So Joe told me he was going to match me up with him. I talked to Larry Black several times because Larry was running the bout of Atlanta with Kathy, Keith Vitale's wife, and they told me I was going to be matched up. Well, when I got there and the brochure came out, I matched up with Ray McCallum. So I said, okay, well, you know, I'm not an idiot. Ray's really, really good. So Ray and I fight, and I think the score ended up being 2-1. Wasn't even close. Ray beat me at least by 4 points. He was just an incredible fighter. Well, all it did for me was make me want to get better and fight Ray. So I started training harder and wanted to fight Ray. So I went back to Dallas, moved up to light heavyweight, and fought Ray the next year in the finals and lost to him 3-2. And then we fought a team match after that that Joe Corley, Keith Vitale, me, Larry Kelly, David Deaton, and Tony Bell formed. And we beat the Dallas team, which was Jimmy Tabaris, Ishmaelis Robles, Larry Lockhart, and Ray McCallum. And we beat them in Dallas. And we have that.
Wow.
We have pictures and we have the trophy and all that kind of cool stuff. Now, let me tell you the ending story about Ray McCallum. Bobby Tucker and Ray McCallum and I went to California. And we spent a week and a half in one of Chuck Norris's schools in Sherman Oaks, California. We stayed there in the school, and we trained every day. And we went up and down to different dojos up along the strip, and we fought anybody and everybody. And I got to tell you what, Ray, as good as everybody thinks that you've seen Ray McCallum, you should see him when he's fighting in a school for 3 or 4 hours against every black belt. He's doing stuff that's movie stuff. It's movie stuff. It's like Jackie Chan really knew how to fight stuff.
Right.
And Bobby just beat you with four techniques and doesn't need anything else.
Absolutely.
Ray McCallum story.
He just recently got his 10th degree black belt, and we want to congratulate him on that, him and Dan
Anderson
both. I watched
it.
Got it from Mr. Sting. God bless him.
Gary, please allow me 30 more seconds to tell about Ray McCallum.
Of course.
I'm gonna go to the beginning. The first time Ray McCallum came.
I love Raymond. Tell me another Raymond story. Go ahead. Go.
I got 100, but I'll stop at this one. In 1979 was the first time Raymond – 1979 was the first time Ray came to the Mid-America Nationals, and he's fighting in the – in the preliminaries, Danny's fighting Scorpion from Chicago. And me and Keith had never seen him before. And Keith's going, Mike, that crazy Texas guy's fighting. So we go running over the ring, and we're standing there with a bunch of other fighters. We're all standing around. And Ray's got a headband on. And he's standing there, and he's hooting and hollering before it even starts. And Scorpion rushes him. Well, Raymond, he literally disappeared. He's like a magician who fell through the floor. Scorpion goes flipping and flying over. The next thing you see is this guy up in the air, coming down with both feet on top of him, smacks him, kicks him, punches him, jumps up, and he's screaming and yelling. Keith Vitale and I are just bumping and hugging and going, oh, my gosh. Of course, Ray wins that, and we are out of our minds going, we'd never seen anybody do anything like that before. And that's our initiation to Ray McCallum.
Yeah,
we became fans. I mean, we both had to fight him several times, but we became fans. Yeah.
Yeah. I've never seen, he won the Pro-Am 10 years. I've never seen anybody get a crowd. No one. I mean this. Get a crowd into a frenzy as much as Mr. McCallum when he stepped into the ring. That's a true story. Okay, let's go. Let's go to, again, we lost him. I got to talk about him because we both loved him. Mr. Steve Fisher.
Steve Fisher.
Rest in peace, Steve. Yes, sir.
I read about Steve Fisher before I ever started karate, and it was called the California Kid, and he was famous for not only just fighting but doing forms and anything else, and he was one of the first guys to make the national rankings doing something more than one division, and there were others, but he was one of the first ones, and I met Steve at different tournaments along the way, and I only fought Steve in warm-up fights. We never ended up fighting each other. In a tournament, but I had the highest respect for Steve and as a person and as a competitor. But my best story for Steve is we're fighting in the AKA Grand Nationals in Chicago, and it's Keith Vitale, Bobby Tucker, John Jackson, the big tall guy, and Steve Fisher.
John Lewis Jackson.
And back then, and they didn't say who had to fight who. And I'll never forget, I think it must have been Sharky or something, he said, well, y'all just fight who you want. And Steve goes, well, I'll fight John. And Bobby and Keith were like, okay. And can I tell you that Steve Fisher at 5'8" had no trouble fighting him. He just completely won the fight hands down, it wasn't even close. And then Keith beat Bobby Tucker, and then Keith beat Steve Fisher for grand champion. And I told Steve, every time I talked to him, we would talk about it. And I would say, Steve, you are an amazing fighter, that you could handle someone a foot taller than you and 60 pounds heavier and just completely annihilate them like that. And I'm not just a fighter, but John was a great fighter. And
yes.
Steve had
and
trouble.
And Steve was a pure karate technician because he came from Mr.
Yes.
Stone. But, he was one of the first guys who do the Triple Crown stuff, who win weapons, kata, and fighting. In terms
and
of way
exactly
before the
what
grand
I was
champions.
Saying. Triple Crown.
Exactly. Now,
absolutely.
Someone that's a big part of my history now, because I brought him in for his 9th degree black belt a few years back at the Gathering, and just someone that I knew even before I came from Hawaii to here. And, golly bum, he's the oldest living karate competitor in the universe. We decided that. This Mr. Dan Anderson, he's been fighting for almost 60 years. So he just recently fought at the 50-year-old division in the traditional tournament. Tell me about Danny and your relationship.
Well, like I said, I remember reading about Dan before I started karate, and then as Keith and I started traveling, because we started traveling, we started seeing Dan at tournaments, and then Keith lost to him and beat him. And I've only warmed up with Dan. I've never had to fight him in a tournament. He was in a different division. But Dan, to me, was Keith Vitale with longer hair. I mean, he literally fought exactly like Keith. And I mean that as a compliment. But let me tell you why I'm going to give Dan more credit than I do John Longstreet or Larry Kelly or Ray McCallum or Steve Fisher. Those guys had other fighters. You know, Steve had all the Mike Stone guys and Howard Jackson and Natividad and then Garcia and those guys to work out with. Ray had Al Francis and Jimmy Gatto and Rudy Smedley and those guys. Dan Anderson had nobody up in the Northwest. I mean, there's nothing up there. He didn't have a stable. We had an incredible stable down south, like we've already discussed. Keith had all these guys in Atlanta that he was, you know, working out with Vernon Johnson and Charles Fears and all these incredible fighters. Dan had nobody. He got good pretty much on his own and then became literally one of the 10 best of all time. He literally did, which is incredible.
Well,
I just love Dan.
I
consider him a true friend.
What a historian. He's just like you, exactly, as far as the history goes. Very exactly.
Right. When we get together, man,
put
it on me.
Mr. Toki Hill.
Well, Toki Hill, let me tell you this. And people in karate need to know this. If you line up and there's 50 guys in a division and you're the second best guy and you fight that person in the last fight, guess what? You get second place. If you fight that guy in the first fight, guess what happens? You get nothing, right? I go to the USKA Grand Nationals in Pittsburgh. Never been there before. I look at the division, and there's probably 60 guys in the division. They're all wearing white gis. I'm wearing a red uniform. Me and Bruce Brucci went up wearing red gis. We're the only two not wearing a white gi in a USKA tournament. We see Robert Trias and John Pachivas and all these guys, and Bruce's, you know, they're all bowing and bowing, and, you know, we don't do all the bowing stuff. We're saying, hey, how you doing? So I look over, and I see this blonde-headed guy. He looks like Ken from Barbie and Ken. He's got teeth missing in the front. His gi looks like he just got it out of the bag, and his belt is as stiff as it can be. I said, this is my guy. Well, Toki Hill kicked my butt. This was in 76 before I knew who Toki was. So anyway, he beat me, and I wasn't used to the way they were fighting. This was early on in my career. I got much better later. But Toki and I have become friends over the years, and I've told Toki that story. And Toki says, well, Mike, I'm sorry, but I don't remember that fight or beating you. And Toki went on to lose to James Cook, and James Cook, I think, went on to beat John Jackson for Grand Championship, actually. And Bruce got second that day. He lost to John Jackson in the heavyweight finals. So, you know, and I became friends with John Jackson and James Cook and Toki, which is a great initiation to friendships that have lasted 40 years just from that one tournament. But I've seen Toki several times over the years, and we become good friends. And he was actually at the top 10 reunion at the Battle of Atlanta last year, and we spent a lot of time together. Just great seeing him.
Yeah, back at the official karate second annual in Ohio, he spanked me really good, too. Beat me pretty good.
I think he would have been much, much higher had he traveled more.
Well, here's the thing. I think Toki and other people like Mr. George Anderson are the roots and the pioneers that helped get the USA into the participation games in 2020 for Japan.
Right.
I really Toki really put his heart into that, even though it didn't happen at the time in his career. But he sure had his heart for it, and then Mr. Anderson is responsible for what's happening. But anyway, that's incredible.
Absolutely.
Toki is a great guy. And one more thing, I got to say this to Toki. Thank you, Toki, because he sponsored my son 2 years in a row for his Columbus event that Arnold Schwarzenegger does. And
that's
God
wonderful.
Bless Toki. He's a great guy.
God bless Toki.
Listen,
everybody loves Toki.
I got one more guy. I got to say him because he's one of the nicest guys and best fighters I ever saw. And I know him really well. Marty Knight. Tell me about Marty.
Well, Marty was on the scene back in the middle 70s, and he was getting, you know, some fourth places and a couple of thirds. And, you know, I fought Marty seven times and beat Marty seven times. And I got to tell you, Marty never fought me well. He was always intimidated by me and my name and stuff. And in the middle 70s, Marty came up to me and he said, listen, I want to come up to your school in Columbia, and I hear you have all these black belts coming in. And back in the 70s, we just opened our dojo up to anybody. And we had, you know, Magic Johnson and Duck and Freddie Warlord coming in from North Carolina. We had Ray Thompson and Tommy Sigler coming in from Charleston area. And we had fighters from Atlanta driving up. And, of course, Sam Chapman and Bobby Tucker and Jerry Rome. And they would just come in and work out. So Marty said, I want to come do that. So Marty came in and he jumped into some of his traditional stances, and I said, Marty, you're never going to win in that stuff. You got to put your hands up. You got to move. We put music on and taught him some rhythm, and Marty was fighting, and Marty started doing a little bit better. Now, Marty Knight, I hopefully would tell you this, is his favorite story. In 1979, I convinced Marty to fly to Los Angeles, California, and fight in the PK Nationals. Well, his very first fight, he loses, and he loses really, really bad. And he comes out of the ring, and I'm sitting in a chair, and he's very depressed and upset. And I said, Marty, go over there and get two guys, make a team, and y'all get into the team championships. Well, during the team championships, he got Chip Wright on his team, who's no slouch, and another guy. And Marty ends up fighting Alvin Prouder for first place in the team championships, and Marty Knight beat Alvin Prouder. How about that?
Wow. That is impressive. Yeah,
and that put Marty over the hump. Marty realized then, hey, I train hard, and I listen to Mike Genova and some of these other fighters like Keith Vitale, and I can do things. And so Marty fought for years and years and years and did very, very well in tournament competition.
Well, you know, I've set this up this whole night for my magic bullet question, and this is I've been waiting all day to ask you this.
Let's do it.
You know, you've got a story that talks about the rise and fall of Black Belt Point Karate and the ratings in America and who killed it, and the event, the promoter, and the timing of this historic time in American sport karate. Very bluntly, I want you to tell me, my listeners, the story and share the story with for the archives.
Well, like how we were talking earlier, we had the Steve Fisher tournament in Los Angeles, and we had the California State Championships with Schlesinger. We had the PK Nationals that Joe Corley and his whole crew, you know, had in Baltimore and in Los Angeles, and it moved around. We had Roy Curbins in Texas, Mike Dillard in Oklahoma City, and the Worleys up in Minneapolis, and we had the U.S. Open with Mike Sawyer and Mike McCoy, and, of course, you know, the Battle of Atlanta and the Chicago tournament. So everyone knew the tournaments, and I equate that to the PGA. We had a circuit, and so what happened was a lot of these promoters, you know, work together to make this incredible. And Joe Corley, I think, deserves so much credit for getting everybody to travel and do it. Well, there were a group of people who had tournaments who were a little bit under the radar, and they wanted to be part of that. And they, for one reason or another, couldn't be part of that. So there's a guy in New York who had a magazine, Boy Slidell, and had some pull and some money. And so he formed his own little circuit and started putting people's pictures in his magazine. Well, you only had Karate Illustrated, Black Belt, and Kung Fu Illustrated, so he competed with that, and he put everybody's picture in there. Well, everybody went, wait a minute, I don't have to win Grand Champion to get my picture in. I can win Green Belt Lightweight, and he put hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people's pictures in there, which marketing-wise is smart. So he called his tournament the Grand Nationals. Then it went to the Super Grand Nationals. And then you could buy your little nameplate or your business card or whatever that said you were a national champion. Well, why be the Battle of Atlanta champion when you can be the national champion? And then the rankings started to fall. Nobody was ranking them anymore. There were too many number ones, too many top tens, and nobody knew who was who. And that's what happened to sport karate. And that happened right after me and Keith retired, when you had Steve Anderson, Steve Nasty Anderson, and Billy Blanks, Joey Shiflett, Chip Wright, all these guys still fighting in the tournaments I mentioned earlier, still trying to win. And then these other people, and their titles are bigger, and their trophies are bigger, and they've got business cards. You know, and this is just a little sidebar on that, Gary. There's a guy here in Columbia who I know who's a very nice guy. He's not even an average fighter, but he fought in the Super Grand Nationals. There were only two people in his black belt division, and they had to fight twice. He fought and lost, then he fought and won, and he walks around introducing himself as a world karate champion. And that's just horrible. You know, especially when you have Joe Louis and Bill Wallace and Jeff Smith and Chuck Norris and Mike Stone and Keith Vitale. Those are the world champions. I mean, not that. And it just diluted it. And it's embarrassing to me. So well,
I appreciate that insight.
Can I tell you the movie story of Wilmington, North Carolina?
I want you to add more to that insight by telling me the story about when Mr. Vitale and Mr. Lewis was on the
set of story.
A movie they were doing, and a young lady came up and did something. Tell me that story, or tell my listeners that story. That's interesting.
Right. Well, Keith Vitale was in Wilmington, North Carolina at the studios there, and he was doing a movie, not a karate movie, a non-martial arts movie, with the great Joe Lewis, and, you know, just a small part for other people. But Joe and Keith were actually the stars of the movie, and it was a mafia movie. And don't tell Keith, but I haven't seen it. But like, they're doing a scene, and then there was going to be some type of action in the scene. And there's a girl there, and she's telling Keith that she will help Joe or Keith do the scene because she was a 7- or 8-time national karate fighting champion. And Keith immediately, you know, as humble as he is, instead of saying, "Hey, I'm Keith Vitale," he goes, "Well, do you know who that is? That's Joe Lewis." She didn't know who Joe was, and he tried to tell her, and she didn't, you know, like, "I don't know who he is." So then they tried to tell her who Keith Vitale was, and she never heard of Keith Vitale. Now, that is embarrassing and horrible. And this is what I equate that to, Gary. Imagine a golfer today not knowing who Arnold Palmer is or Jack Nicklaus.
Right.
Imagine that. And that's who Keith Vitale and Joe Lewis, I mean, along with Chuck and Bill Wallace and Jeff Smith, I mean, they are the Jack Nicklaus and Arnold Palmers of our sports. And here's a girl, because of this super grand nationals and the magazine and Boyce Liddell and those other promoters. And you know, hey, I'm not fretting them. You know, good for them what they tried to do. And they probably didn't purposely try to kill sport karate. But where is it today? Where is it today? You know, it's just horrible. And I regret that they did that. But I'm so glad and feel blessed that we were there when it was right, when there was one number one, and his name was Keith Vitale, and Ray McCallum was number two, and Steve Fisher and Dan Anderson and John Longstreet and Herb Johnson and Bobby Tucker, and those guys were, you know, Jimmy Gatto and Al Francis. I mean, I know them like their brothers, Toki Hill, Tony Palmore. I mean, those were your top ten. You didn't have to go, "Well, I don't know." You knew, and that's my story.
Right, without a doubt, and also – you know, back as we talked about in the beginning part of the interview, is back then you knew exactly who they were and there wasn't any doubt. A lot of it was because they put all these, I guess, weight divisions and different things and sanctions and all these groups, and everybody just
right.
got really confused.
No,
I appreciate
it's
that.
Very confusing.
So much. Now, I got two questions left for you before we go to the phone lines. And you're the president of the South Carolina Black Belt Hall of Fame. And you got some incredible people in there, Mr. Bobby Tucker, of course, Tony Young, Keith Vitale, Marty Knight, Sam Chapman, John Orrick. I mean, you got some people that are part of that advisory board. You're doing something really different with your group. You're doing background checks, and it has to be mandatory in the state for so many years, and they've got to have at least 30 years or whatever. I forgot, 25 or 30 years.
30 years in the martial arts, 5 years retired. And
right.
you know, we do all the checks, and 90% of the acting members have to vote you in. So it's very difficult
good.
To get in, but that's good. I mean, I think once
yes.
you get in, you'll be glad that it is that difficult to get in. It's not for everybody.
Yes. Well, that's good. You're setting standards, and I talked.
And
Sam,
what we did, Gary,
I...
is we received a proclamation from our state senate and our state house of representatives last year for all not for our competition, and I tell people, we did not receive that proclamation for our fighting. We received it for our community service, for what we do in our martial arts schools,
yes.
for the kids in the community, and that's what we received it for. And we're getting ready. I'm waiting for a phone call this week from Governor Henry McMaster, and he's going to have the entire Black Belt Hall of Fame come to the governor's mansion. We're going to have lunch with him and take pictures just so we can all have it for our schools to let all of our students know that we are supported by the governor of the state of South Carolina.
That is exciting. That's got to be exciting.
Isn't that exciting?
Really? Yes. That's ultimate community service.
Absolutely.
Now, before I ask this last question, I've got to plug it because I pumped it really hard. You're a kid advocate. You're known for your work with kids. You've got hundreds of students, thousands that you've gone through your studios. What's the secret about Mike Genova and his kid ability? What's the secret,
okay.
brother?
I'm going to tell you the secret. You ready?
Yes,
no,
sir.
Okay. My mom and my dad got divorced when I was 11. There's seven brothers and sisters, and my mom had one car, so I couldn't go to different, you know, things I wanted to go to. And I wanted to play baseball forever. So I was 11 years old, and my mom said, well, you can't. You're going to have to walk. It's 2 miles down the road, da-da-da-da. So I tried out for the baseball team, and I made the team. And for almost 3 weeks, the coach, who's now still a friend of mine, Bill Oswald, called me, hey, third baseman, come here. Hey, third baseman, come here. And I would come home crying every day. The coach doesn't know my name, Mom. The coach doesn't know my name. Finally, one day, I made a good play, and he said, Michael, and that's what my real name is Michael. He said, Michael, great play. I couldn't wait to run home all the way to tell my mom, coach knows my name. So when I started my karate school, the very first rule I put on myself was, I don't care how many students you get, you better know everybody's name. And not only know their names, I say every kid's name. Now, Gary, today I taught all my classes. I have over 400 students. Today I taught every one of my classes today, and I do not teach my children how to tie their karate belts. I sit in a chair. They line up. They bring their shirt tails tucked in, and they hand me their belt, and I tie their belt, and I say their name, and I ask them questions. I'll say, Gary, did you eat breakfast this morning? Gary, did you brush your teeth? Gary, how are you getting along with your mom? And during that 20 seconds that it takes me to tie your belt, I'm communicating with you. I'm having personal contact with every one of my students that I teach every day. And that's just my main secret right there. There you go.
Thank you. Thank you. That is very special. And I appreciate you sharing that with me. My last question before we get to the phone lines, and I'm sure there's people wanting to talk to you. You're a history general, one of the original guys for the Sport Karate Museum Archives. What's it mean to you? And you followed my work from the early 90s when I started it. How's it affect? I appreciate the poster. God bless you, man. I appreciate the.
And you're going to get the films.
Yeah, and
you're
going to
get
too.
The films from the 73 Battle of the Champions.
I want to hear you say, you know, how important it is for us to remember all those names that we talked about tonight.
Well, this is the thing. We don't have a whole lot of footage of Mike Stone fighting or Chuck Norris or Joe Louis back in the early days. We have a little bit.
Right.
Jim Harrison, you know, Fred Wren, Skipper Mullins. You know, even I've heard stories about them. It would be great if we could see those films or see them on a video talking about those fights instead of just having the old Black Belt magazine articles to look at. What you're doing is you're not making this a regret 20 years from now when people say, man, I'd like to hear Mike Genova's voice talking about the Battle of Atlanta, Tournament of Champions in 73, and, you know, when Everett
right.
Eddie fought Jeff Smith. And, you know, see, that's what I'm talking about. So you're being able to document this and put it in the archives for forever. And that's
well,
one of the wonderful things that you're doing, Gary, and thank you.
Well, no, thank you for being part of the history, Mike. And with that said, I want to say thank you again tonight for this moment that you've
sure.
given with me and my listeners and to share all these stories. And I'd like to have you back when we just talk about maybe tournament today and where it is and how we can maybe put our input into it in another way. I'd love to have you back. Would you like to come back?
Absolutely. Love to. I've got
Super.
Hundreds of stories.
That's what I'm saying. Maybe I'd like to do a program maybe one night where we can just trade stories. Maybe have a game of war. I do a story, you do a story. We just trade back and forth.
We could get Dan Anderson in Portland, Oregon, and me, and Dan could tell a story, and I could tell a story. We could go from there.
Well, won't that be fun? Okay, that'd be great. Hunchy Jesse, Hunchy Bowen, are you there, sir?
I am, sir. How you doing?
Okay. Super,
great
super.
Show.
Anyone on the line to talk to Mike or?
Yes, sir. We have a couple of people on the line, so the lines are open.
Super.
Everyone, if you'd like to share, the lines are open.
Hi, this is Professor Gary Lee with Mike Genova. Who's on the line?
Can you get on the line?
Yes, ma'am. Hello, who's this, please? So, Mike, I guess I got someone shy here. So,
dead air.
That's the same thing I said.
Hello?
Sir, what'd you say? Yes, hello. Who is this?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, well, I have no idea how this happened. This is Bruce. I was listening. I had no idea.
Wow, Bruce. Cool.
Hey,
yeah. This is Bruce. How are you?
Fabulous. And Mike, great job. Gary, awesome interview. I've been sitting here enthralled, and I had no idea that I would go from listening to be on the air. But, Mike, when you said dead air, I said, Gene's here with me. We said dead air together right before you said it.
See, Bruce, we've been together too long.
Gary.
That's and okay. I like the moment of silence.
I missed the first 8 or 9 minutes, regrettably. I dialed the wrong number, but what a great interview. And, Mike, thanks for doing it. And, I mean, such great stories. Yeah,
you missed all the good stuff I said
about
you.
Yeah, a lot of them were about you, Bruce. Absolutely.
Well, I missed all that, but I was thinking about Dan Anderson in Minnesota when we had the Dan Anderson specials.
Yeah, the
what
thing about
that?
The Dan Anderson special, which is a drink, Gary, Dan forgot what was in it, but Bruce remembered drinking it. That's all that mattered.
That's right. I know it had coffee, and it was cold in Minnesota. We arrived with Hawaiian shirts, a suntan, no coat, and it was snowing.
Yeah. 1979, Minneapolis.
Yep.
Well, Bruce, I got you on the line. Let me ask you. When did you realize that Mike was going to be the champion he turned out to be? I'm asking instructor. When did you realize that Mike had the gift?
Well, let me tell you what Mike has had from the jump is heart and a winning attitude. Like, you did not want to play basketball with him. He was such a competitor. I mean, and when he was doing his bicycle racing the same way, and when the light switch went off for the martial arts, it was just that same competitive energy, that work ethic, that desire to be the best. It just rocked and rolled, and you knew he was going to be great. And Mike, I don't know if you told this story, and you may be able to tell it better than me, but Keith, when we were at Nebraska's, was talking about this white belt had come up and watched him fight. And this guy came up and said, well, you know, you could do this better or this better. And if you do this, you'll win your next fight. And Keith says, and I think, was Keith a brown belt at the time, Mike?
I don't know, but he was fighting Jerry Rome in the finals.
Yeah,
and I told Keith.
A brown belt.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
And I think Bruce is right. He was a brown belt, and I didn't know Keith at the time. This was right before we actually, you know, started hanging out, and I told him what he'd do to beat the guy. And he came over to me later, and he won. And he said, "Well, thank you so much for your help, sir. What, you know, who, you know, what's it up? You know, the belt." And I said, "Oh, I'm a white belt."
but I did stay at a Holiday Inn Express last night.
Well, Bruce,
that's funny.
Yes, Bruce always kept us laughing on our trips, but it's true. I noticed very early on how to beat people. And even though I couldn't necessarily do it, I saw very early on people's weaknesses and stuff, you know, which was a great advantage to me. And Bruce equated it early on when I was fighting in karate that I was like Glenn Keeney, not as talented as Bill Wallace or Jeff Smith or those guys, but able to beat those guys. And we saw Glenn Kenny beat Wallace a few times. So
yeah,
I thank
known
Bruce
as
for pop. That compliment.
Yeah,
he was.
That's why I said in the opening, I said the people that I've interviewed, that you were very smart, very, very smart, and you were cagey. Well, Bruce, thank you for calling in. And, Mike, I got to say thank you again for this interview. To have both you guys and talking to you and knowing that we have history with each other and we go back so many years, I appreciate your time. And Hunty Bowen, can you wrap us up, please?
Sure, sir. And, guys, this was a great interview. Mike, you know, thank you for being on because, you know, Who's Who and the radio show is really about preserving those that history, that story, that last chance to sort of learn the truth. And everyone, you know, Mike, you're into who's who in the martial arts, and we have the 2017 event that's going to be coming up in Washington, D.C. And we really want everyone, if you know of masters and grandmasters that are true masters and grandmasters that have made contributions to the martial arts, we want to share those stories to make sure that they're not lost. So you can go to www.whoswhointhemartialarts.com, submit your nomination. What we do is we send this to our board of advisors, and now we select. There is a qualification process in there that we do. But everyone, this is really what we really want to do is to don't forget the foundation of American karate and who are some of the people that built the way for today's martial arts. And keeping those stories, those legends, those people and their contributions, keeping those things alive. Remembering the great warriors of sport karate.
Well, thank you so much for that ending. And with that said, another great show. Thank you, Mike, again for your time and effort. I appreciate your history and the stories. And I do want to have Mr. Genova back. And don't forget, next week we'll have Dr. Nick Chamberlain talking about the gathering in the Kempo International Black Hall of Fame. And we'll end the month out with Mr. Bob Liker. On behalf of the AMAA Pioneers and Legends Master Show, this is Professor Gary Lee with the Sport Karate Museum Archives saying, good night.
Aloha.
Mahalo. And aloha. Thank you.